If you want to get your favorite technical news, give the Gizmo Gang a call. Gizmo Gang.
Hey, welcome to Gizmo Gang Show 133. I'm Chris, and with me today is
Matt.
And unfortunately, Dr. Sean is not with us again. He takes vacations more often than who? I mean, I don't know anybody who takes as many vacations as him.
It's a mystery.
So he's going to miss our talk today, which is all about Star Trek. So if you didn't know, Matt and I are, we're not Trekkers. We're not Trekkies. We are Trek. And, you know, we've been fans for so long, and we do go back and forth on which is our favorite. I'm more traditional in that I like the stuff pre-next gen, as in the timeline period stuff. So TOS, Discovery, Enterprise, they're probably my favorites. Matt, you love TOS, but you're...
I do love TOS. I'm not a big fan of the Kelvin timeline.
Yeah.
So the movies, the new movies kind of...
There are things I love about the new movies. Like, I believe Carl Urban is probably the best person to ever take over DeForest Kelly's role as Dr. McCoy. But I'm totally, totally upset with the J.J. Abrams. I mean, he's done it to Trek. He's done it to Star Wars. Let's even though we have canon, and we have there's a universe that has rules to follow. Let's throw that all out of the water. So, I mean, there's just things that I love the movies. I particularly
what he did to Khan is unforgivable.
Yeah.
Forget all that other stuff. What he did to Khan is unforgivable.
So I actually have less issue with that than I have with the fact that I'm a Starfleet cadet, and now I'm first officer, and then, oh, now I'm captain, you know, in the course of a week, or how many days it took to do the first 2009 movie. Those continuity issues are what ruins a lot of movies. You know, it would have been like Game of Thrones, and, you know, within 2 days, we moved Jon Snow from being the bastard child of Ned Stark to being, you know, the emperor of the world. And that probably has less issues and connotations than it does in the Star Trek universe. I mean, he's done the same thing with Star Wars, and I don't want to dwell on Star Wars because that's a whole nother episode about how they owe us reparations for for what he's done. But what he and Disney have done is what I should say. But, you know, the continuity issues are hugely wrong in Star Wars as well. And the problem is it just kind of continues. And, you know, you kind of become numb to it from movie to movie. And I will agree, having a British gentleman, an Anglo-Saxon British gentleman, take over Khan, Noonien, and Singh, Ricardo Montalban, who was... Spanish made more sense but you know they did try to. It's kind of funny what the Marvel universe tried, or not Marvel, the Star Trek universe, the Paramount folks, you know, in doing working with, I forget who makes the Star Trek comic now, but they did try to explain that Admiral
Marcus,
you know, had him had plastic surgery and lightened his skin and all this stuff, and they implanted John Harrison over him as part of the timeline. But, you know, too little too late. If you don't read the comic books, then you're not going to see the get that information, which 99% of the people aren't going to read the comic books.
Well, that aside, you don't make a movie about Kong and not cover that if that's what you're going to do.
Exactly. Curiosity is that something that ended up on the cutting room floor? I mean, we've seen badly edited Star Trek movies before. Star Trek V is one of them.
Well, I'll tell you, that movie is out on DVD, and I don't recall seeing that as a deleted scene.
I don't remember that either.
So I'm going to have to say probably not.
Interesting. So outside of TOS, what's your favorite? Even though you talked about the movies, let's move on, because that could be a show in and of itself.
I liked DS9. I just didn't like Avery Brooks and Sisko.
I liked the characters in DS9, but I've tried to go back. So you know.
But I'll tell you this though, I didn't watch the finale for Deep Space Nine until years later. Like, I just got Netflix 2 years ago, and like that's when I finally saw it.
Yeah.
It ended well.
It did. There was a little bit of, you know, I loved some of the characters. I really think Cole Meany he's a fine actor. I mean, you've seen him in The Commitments, and you know, he was a British stage actor before doing Star Trek, because he, you know, he was obviously part of TNG, where he started out as a lieutenant somehow.
The O'Brien promotion.
Yeah, the O'Brien promotion, or down to a chief, a non-commissioned officer. But the I loved his character. I liked him and the Keiko O'Brien and the family aspect of that. I did not. I liked Quark and Rom and that, which I don't usually like the Ferengi characters, but I somehow identified with them. And I wasn't a big fan, particularly of the whole Bajoran story and all of that, you know, with all the Vedics and Kira having this big chip on her shoulder until the very last couple seasons. And there were parts that I really liked. There are episodes I liked. Like, there was the one where they had the sniper who was killing people, and, and it was, they used to... The sniper rifle was a phaser, but it used transporter technology, so they could transport the beam through the ship to kill other people. I thought that was cool, but as a show, I particularly disliked the Dominion War. It just kind of, your complaint about how all of season 2 of Enterprise was the Zindi War. It was a couple of seasons, if not a couple and a half seasons, of the Dominion War, and it just got old. That, you know, don't get me wrong, there were good episodes in there. Like, there was an episode where the Jem'Hadar soldier who was able to get off the
Ketracel White,
and all of that. But there were so few of those that in many respects, it kind of drugged down Star Trek, in my opinion, until Voyager showed up.
Well, I was just going to ask you about Voyager.
So I like Voyager. So when I go back and I watch the and don't get me wrong, I mean, I watched every episode of TNG multiple times, but I when I go back and watch the show, it's one of the things I think is interesting about Enterprise. I can go back and watch Enterprise, and I think the show held up. Same thing with TOS. You can, you know, the show holds up, even though it was kind of campy in some spots. You don't see that because the writing and the acting was good enough that kind of distracts from that other piece. And I think Enterprise holds up. But when I go back and watch TNG, seasons 6 and 7, I think, hold up. But I think I can sit down and watch all of Voyager from the beginning, even though some of it was kooky. Voyager definitely got better when they got rid of Kes, because the actress who played Kes evidently was crazy in the first place.
She was.
And
Jennifer Lean,
that's right. And I think it made the show flow a little bit better. Even the storylines flow better without that character. And I particularly loved the ending, you know, the finale and them coming back. And, you know, there were lots of, even though it sometimes repeated Star Trek type, you know, tropes, you know, time travel and you know, converging timelines and all this other stuff,
they did a good job of keeping it interesting so that it didn't feel like it was the same episode that it had been before.
So Voyager, for me, was the first Trek show that I was heavily invested in from the beginning. And so I kind of felt like it just didn't really hold up like TOS does. Or now, you and I have had discussions before about Next Gen, about how the first, like, four seasons were just horrible.
Well, it didn't Next Gen really... I mean, I go back and I watch them, because it's not bad. It's entertaining. No, bad Trek is still better than most TV. Let's just say that.
True that.
But it wasn't... They didn't get in their stride. You know, there was not a lot of continuity show to show... Yeah. That needed to be there, that like TOS had from the beginning. And it's kind of funny, TOS, I think it was a total mistake, because if you look at when they produced the episodes and then when CBS aired them, they didn't air them in the order that they were produced. But it took a while for them to get in a groove, and it took about two seasons. And I think part of it was TNG, we talked about this, is interesting in the fact that it was the first time Trek had real named actors. I mean, in TOS, William Shatner was known. He was famous for the episode of The Twilight Zone with the gremlin on the plane. And he had been known for several other things. DeForest Kelly was known because he was huge. He always played the cavalry officer who, you know...
Big in Western.
In every Western who is either... on the wrong side of things or was the hero. Yeah. and you know, and actually that's where Jeffrey Hunter came out of too, is he was a Western star, you know, when he did the initial original pilot that never really aired. But, and I don't know a lot about Leonard Nimoy at that time. I think he was somewhat successful, but they weren't like big stars. You know, they weren't the guys making movies and making, you know, they weren't millionaires coming into it. When they started TNG, Patrick Stewart was already a big deal. And we talked about this a lot.
Although he was a bigger deal
overseas
on the other side of the pond than here. I mean, Dune was about the only thing we'd really seen him in.
Yeah.
For real. But he was a bigger... I mean, even him being attached to the project was a big deal.
Deal, yeah. Well, I think he was a big deal at my house because my mom watched almost every BBC period time, you know, piece, mm-hmm. and he had done 99% of those. You know, he was at the time the go-to guy for all of those things.
Well, I mean, what he lent to Star Trek was some serious gravitas from being a Shakespearean actor. Legit.
Yeah.
I love Shatner to death. But he's no Patrick Stewart.
No, and if you look at Shatner, Star Trek is probably the most serious role he's played that he's famous for. I mean, T.J. Hooker is kind of tongue-in-cheek playing at the cops, and his role as Denny...
Denny Crane on Boston Legal.
Legal. That was not a serious role at all.
Yeah.
You know, so... Yeah, it's a different kind of actor and acting. But you then add on top of that, and they did at the time in science fiction, people didn't know who Gates McFadden and Brent Spiner and Jonathan Frakes and all these people, but they were all well established either as stage actors or dancers like Gates McFadden or in production and acting like Jonathan Frakes was before TNG. So it wasn't like they were inexperienced in the craft of acting. What they were inexperienced in was the world of Star Trek. And I think it took two seasons for them to realize that Star Trek was such a cultural phenomenon that it was important how they played the roles and how the continuity existed. And I think it took them a while to figure that out because also, you know,
one of the things Gene Roddenberry brought in, and that we hit at that third season, but he was bringing back original writers and running TNG like they ran TOS, meaning that, hey, DC Fontana, write me a script for this. So-and-so, write me a script for this. Without them knowing and working together and going, hey. So each episode was kind of a show in of itself. And it was the third season when the episodes, even though they were, because the another trope of Star Trek is that each episode has multiple storylines going on. And there's usually, before the third season and in TOS, there is the main storyline. Mm-hmm. And then there's like two sub-storylines going on. And that way you get more characters involved in the show. And then TOS, by the third season, they started adding this other, like a fourth storyline to this, where it was overarching multiple episodes.
So this brings me to the point of what impact Babylon 5 has on Trek.
Yes.
There would be no overarching story beyond maybe the occasional two-parter.
Mm-hmm.
If it weren't for Babylon 5.
Yeah. Yeah, because that was J. Michael Straczynski's kind of thing, is that, well, I want a space opera that is an overarching story. So it got applied to almost all science fiction that was at the same time.
So that's why the Dominion War lasts seasons.
Yeah, well, and that's the problem. I think they took it too far. And don't get me wrong, because they've taken it back quite a bit, but your complaint is the Zindi War in Enterprise, and I will admit, season two of Enterprise is my least favorite season of the three seasons that it ran.
Here's my problem with that, because you're going to try and articulate it, and I'll just go ahead and tell you. My problem with the Zindi War is you don't need a war with six races that none of them, they're all being manipulated by something else.
Correct. And you don't get the resolution until the first two episodes, which was a two-parter in season three.
Yeah, and that was so poorly crafted and executed that it was just like, we need to wrap this up because it sucks and we need to move on. Yeah. And let's admit that Manny Coto coming over, having done 24 and all the really good shows, that were having to come on and save this show.
Yeah.
Had they had a fourth season, I think it would have been okay and would have maybe made it to seven.
After the first two episodes of the third season, I agree. It went back to being really good again. Because the first season was great. Because each episode had, the typical Trek structure. And then it had an overarching thing that of exploration the whole season. But it was great because they were developing the characters. The characters were growing on stage, and then we hit the Zindi War thing, which I had no problem with, because you know the final episode is where the Zindi probe comes and destroys Florida and and everything. But I had no problem with that. But I agree. They took have a whole season just be on the Zindi War. That was maybe a three episode thing. You know, and it really, if you really watched season two, it really was, because you have a couple episodes where they're going into the Expanse to find out what's going on, and then you have episodes that the subplots are the Zindi War, but the main story is something totally else that just happens to happen during that time, because there are some good episodes in season two.
There are. My problem with it is you're going to spend an entire season on a war. It needs to be a good story.
Yeah, it does.
This is where I go back to, if Discovery wanted to do Axanar, then do Axanar. And that's not... of my many complaints about season one of Discovery, that's not one of them.
Yeah.
But I do think...
That's a whole other issue in and of itself and stuff. But, you know, the thing is so, if you remember, Voyager was the premier flagship show when UPN Network started.
Yeah.
And it ran, and then really the end of UPN was when Enterprise ended.
Well, yeah, let's acknowledge why that is.
But during that intervening space of time between the 7 years that Voyager ran, and then I don't remember how much time was passed between the end of Voyager and Enterprise, but it was a couple years. It was a
significant
amount of time. Because I've read a whole bunch of stories that the producers who were doing Enterprise and that they were having to fight Paramount tooth and nail because they were trying to draw in a different demographic with Enterprise. And so one of the things they were trying to do is like they were going to get a guest band to come on and do the opening number.
Yeah.
No.
Well, and then just be on the show.
The show and like, you know, they have them playing in the mess hall.
Yeah.
And they're looking at him and going, no, that makes no sense. Why would that ever happen? And they were trying to do a much more serious show. And then I think what happened is they kind of got their way, but it was one of those things where, fine, do it. We're washing our hands of it. And, you know, and because of that, they didn't either get the writing support they needed or, you know, the oversight that was probably needed to make that season better. I mean, I'm glad they got the third season because at least it went out and they were able to resolve the storylines and stuff. You know, the last episode, as much as because Trip Tucker was my favorite character on that show, him and Archer are my favorite characters. And it sucked that they killed him off at the end, but they didn't in the books, which is kind of strange. You know, you got to see Archer go in and really be part of the beginnings of the United Federation of Planets and the beginnings of Starfleet as part of the United Federation of Planets and all this stuff. And one of the things that was interesting that I liked is it kept Enterprise was true to the storyline of First Contact.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah. And whereas the Vulcans were there to help us, but they were also there to hinder us, you know. And so that we see that the creation of the UFP and even the existence of the UFP is much more like the United States and, you know, co-opetition between states and all of this stuff. And so it was relatable, you know, as opposed to the other way it looks like in a lot of the movies where the Federation is this benevolent all... in government that, you know, is good and it opposes evil. You know, it helped break that stereotype. And that's one of the things I like about Discovery, too, is that they've kept that part going. I know you're not... I mean, I will admit, Michael Burnham is not my favorite character on the show. I don't hate her like I've hated some other characters like Wesley Crusher. Will Wheaton, if you're listening to this, you can send us some... feedback at gizmosapiens@gmail.com. But go ahead.
I'm glad you brought up Wesley because, quite frankly,
he wasn't as bad as everybody made him out to be, frankly. He was just annoying by the time we got to the third season, his character was okay, but they did some horrible writing for his character.
Yeah, and by that time it was too late.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
It was really too late.
The whole, whoever decided to bring the Traveler thing back was an idiot.
Yeah.
So, Wesley's so special he's going to become a Traveler.
Yeah.
But let's go back to Discovery.
Yes.
I don't hate Burnham like I hate other characters.
I just don't like her. I don't hate her, but I don't like her either.
Yeah, she's not.
And part of that comes from the fact that what she did to Giorgio is unforgivable.
Yeah.
There's no going back from that. She assaulted
a superior officer.
A superior officer, the captain, no less.
Yeah.
And then literally took over the ship.
Well,
now it doesn't matter that in the end she was right.
Yeah. But I don't have so much that issue with the fact that she assaulted Giorgio because, you know, she was summarily court-martialed, stripped of her rank, was in prison. Lorca, you know, then... I hate to tell you, but you're going to get all kinds of spoilers if you haven't watched the show. So, but, you know, Lorca says he needs her because his job is to figure out how to win this war and that kind of thing. What I disliked is that, and I know they didn't know if they were getting renewed, so the writers on the last episode of season one, which I think is the weakest episode of the season, they wrapped everything up in a little bow, and, you know, Starfleet gives her commission back as a lieutenant commander. She's not first officer anymore, or commander, but, you know, she's now back and back on the Discovery as part of the regular crew, and I just don't feel that one would happen, even in that timeline and universe. But two, the crew would be so forgiving and everything.
Saru rode her pretty hard.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, his reaction to her is what I felt like the rest of the crew should have had towards her anyway. Although I think the rest of the crew, you kind of get the sense of, well, she was right.
Yeah, you do.
But that's not the finest Starfleet tradition.
No, it is not.
And to make her be the central focal point of the entire show is not right.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, there's a lot of good things about the show and the cast. If Dr. Sean was here, he loves Jet Reno and from second season. But some of the things that I love is I loved in the first season alone, I loved the whole Lorca reveal, that you find out that he's not the Lorca of that timeline. He's the Mirror Universe Lorca. And, you know, and the fact that he was a great actor. You thought he was, you know, because he said, I think it's in the second episode, the one where they actually bring Discovery in.
Mm-hmm.
And he tells you, you know, this is a science vessel, and the science I study is the science of war. You know, that makes sense to me.
Yeah.
And you know, frankly, even though he was the Mirror Universe Lorca, he was pretty even-keeled captain.
Considering what he allowed.
Yeah.
Of Burnham and, well, and all the other craziness going on that
show. Oh, yeah.
You know, but what I like about him is he was results-oriented.
Exactly.
More so than maybe...
Well, and that's one of the other things I've really liked about Discovery is that the captains aren't
copycats.
You know, Giorgio is as different from Lorca as Lorca and Giorgio are as different from
Pike.
And that's, I tell you, the second season where they brought in Pike and Spock and number one from the Enterprise, because, you know, it's before Kirk, I really enjoyed that. And I wish they would flesh that out a little more. You know, there is talk of doing a show, but it's not... Right now, I don't... It appears to me that they're taking it in steps. Because, you know, they started this short treks between season one and season two to kind of fill in some of the gaps. And I think they've done a brilliant job of it. Like the one where they show the AI and Discovery getting, becoming sentient and is in the future. And you don't know why There's this huge mystery of why Discovery is there.
And where is everybody?
And where is everybody? And we don't know. And we still don't know where everybody is in that, but we at least now know, because of season two, because it tied in, why the AI and Discovery was now became sentient. And
why they're in the future.
Yeah, why they're in the future. And I love almost any of the stories they've done, because you and I've talked about this. Just like Carl Urban is the perfect replacement for McCoy, or for DeForest Kelly as McCoy, Rainn Wilson is by far a great representation of Harry Mudd. And every episode that he's been in, from the first season through the short trek, I have just loved those episodes.
I will say they were my favorites from the first season. That's definite.
But going back to talking about the short treks, it appears that they're going to bring Rebecca Romijn and Ethan Peck back to reprise their roles as Number One and Spock in one of the short treks between season two and season three. And if that's the case, I think they're using the short treks to kind of do the baby steps of feeling out if people like the, you know, because, you know, CBS All Access, we got to talk, when we're talking about the future of Trek on television, we have to talk about All Access. They're not going to put, you know, Star Trek Picard and the Georgiou Show and Star Trek Lower Decks or Discovery on regular TV.
No, they will put that other cartoon on
whatever. On Nickelodeon.
Yeah,
and they're talking about a Starfleet Academy cartoon on Nickelodeon. But CBS All Access is trying to move to not be so much where it is all Trek all the time, but that they have a stable of Star Trek shows that they can show all year long. So, you know, you run, I forget how many, actually I can look, it's on my laptop here. If I look at Discovery, season one had 17 episodes.
Sounds about right.
15.
Okay.
I think it's 15. Yeah, it had 15 episodes. So, and season two, I think, had about the same. So that means that, yeah, there's 15 episodes. 14 episodes of season two. So, essentially, what that's doing is that's creating a 14-week period. So we have 52 weeks in a year. So they need to cover, you know, the other 38 weeks with Star Trek programming without too much overlap, if they can help it. And that's, you know, what they're shooting for. So I'm assuming, because one of the advantages of the way they're going, even though they're still running it on an annual basis like they would a regular television station, one of the advantages of the streaming access networks is that, well, maybe I expand this out and I have five or six shows and I don't run them I run them consecutively instead of overlapping, which was part of the problem with Voyager and Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, I mean,
part of the TNG Deep Space Nine issue, too.
There was a bit of oversaturation of the market. I will grant some of that.
I mean, I didn't care.
I liked it. But
the people who were just television fans who liked TNG, yeah, it was probably too much for them.
But, you know, that happens with every show.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there's going to be those fans who are like, man, DS9 was my show. Voyager just blows. And then, oh, but Voyager was awesome and Enterprise is just awful. Well, I mean, that's the nature of it. And, you know, I mean, those of us who like Star Trek for Star Trek's sake are going to generally be accepting of it because it's what it is.
Yeah.
So long as it stays relatively true to the original vision.
Yeah, and the quality remains the same.
Right. I mean, we can nitpick about Khan being a stick-in-the-mud Brit, but honestly, for me, it was a jazz to see the Enterprise on the big screen again.
Oh, it was. Me too.
You know, I mean, so it's... And let's face it, Paramount's kind of banking on that. And now so is CBS.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and you know, I'm jazzed about what's coming out. The one show that's coming out first, I don't know how I feel about it, which is the Star Trek Picard show.
I would be worried about the show if Patrick Stewart weren't the driving force behind it.
Correct. But, and you know, I don't expect him, I mean, Lord, it's been 20-some-odd years since TNG ended.
Yeah.
You know, I don't expect him to pick up and take an action role. He's almost, I don't know, I know he's in his late 70s. He's almost 80 years old. Maybe he's older than that. I don't remember. But I don't expect him to be an action role.
But he was never an action captain in the first place.
No, he wasn't. But I also don't want to every episode of Picard to be some kind of
overly cerebral.
Correct. There needs to be some variety.
Exercise and thought.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know.
That is a fear.
And everything, and, you know, and they're bringing people back. So, you know, Jonathan Frakes directed several episodes of both season one and season two of Discovery.
Well, that's one of the things that I actually like about the Star Trek family.
Yeah.
You know, once you're in, and you're in for life. I really kind of feel like it's what they're doing now is smart. They're bringing back some of those folks to just be around to help some of these folks that are new to the phenomena to kind of ease them into it, you know?
Yeah.
And give them a little bit of a insight into what's coming to the rest of their life.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I agree. But my difficulty with the show, and I may be totally off base, is the fact that they keep saying that they're trying to make it more thoughtful and introspective as opposed to the more action-oriented. Now, it'll be interesting because it'll be the first Star Trek show that is Star Trek, but it is not, even though Picard was in, and we find out from the trailer, he did make Admiral, but it is not a Star Trek show centered around Starfleet.
Which, you know, in every iteration of the role-playing games, they have tried to do that, and so there's always been talk of doing a Star Trek show that's not Starfleet-based.
Yeah.
I don't know, man.
I know, it's going to be difficult. Now, I mean, so word has it that late 2019, so sometime this fall, probably late fall, I would say, they're going to release it before they're either going to release it before Thanksgiving or before Christmas, or right after Christmas, between Christmas and New Year's. Those are the three times when they say late fall. I can't imagine them doing it earlier.
Because... I mean,
but,
really,
you
honestly,
know,
November and December are really about the times those shows launch. I mean, it's...
Well, I don't know. They may not do it, because they, you know... Both Discovery and Orville typically start in January, you know, and they run their 14 or 15 weeks, and then we're So they may launch it. So say they.
But I will say this about All Access, though. What they're trying to do is disrupt what's happening on broadcast TV.
Well, true. But if they're trying to, but Discovery is not a broadcast television show. So if they're trying to.
But it was the first episode of the first season.
Yeah.
And so you have to realize that that comes into play there too.
But it's possible that they could bring it out, you know, in that earlier time, between late September and early November, because if they wanted to run 14, 15 episodes, that, you know, that's the time you want to start. Because if you could start at the end of September, I can run 12 episodes before January, and then I can start Discovery right after it.
Yeah.
You know, on a 15 episode run.
With no overlap or very little
overlap. With no overlap or very little. Yeah. And that may be the case. When they met late 2019, they've already finished, according to a report I've read, they finished the first four episodes, and right now it's Jonathan Frakes' turn to do like the next four or five episodes. So, you know, it looks like they're trying to do a full season run of it. Now, what will be interesting is...
So let me ask you this, guys, yeah. Since you just said full season run.
Well, full season for streaming.
Well, and that's just it. To me, this is adopting more of the European series model.
Yeah, 10 to 14, 15 episodes.
Than what we're used to.
Oh, yeah.
Because now, to me, the second season of Discovery felt a little short to me. Mm-hmm. Just about the time it hit its stride, we're wrapping it up.
Yeah.
I could have used about... Well, 4 to 6 more episodes.
We're very used to television shows in the United States having 22 to 26 episodes per season.
Yes.
And you're right. The European model is much shorter. If you get, I mean, like if you, I don't know if you watch Doc Martin or any of the shows like that, and you have seasons of Doc Martin, it's on Netflix, that are like eight episodes long.
Yeah.
And you're done. You know, yeah. That's until the next.
But you know what? I will say this about that method, if that's what it takes to tell your story and then you're done,
mm-hmm.
Stretching that out to 20 some odd episodes
doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Is how you get the Zindi War.
Yeah, or, well, you get viewer fatigue.
Well, yeah, which is what I'm saying.
Yeah, no.
Or in your case, the Jem'Hadar Founders War.
Yeah, frankly... If that had just been a season, the Dominion War had been a season,
yeah,
it would have been perfect. I mean, I think they could have done everything that they had done in a season.
The problem with the Dominion War in particular is what they were trying to do was run that in real time.
And, yes.
And notice my air quotes there on radio or on audio only. And so you can't really run a war in a season that you're trying to do it in real time.
Yeah.
And so I get that. But I will agree that there's a bit of fatigue.
Yeah.
In any of those war shows.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Well, I mean, season one, if they...
But somehow Battle on 5 managed to do it. So.
In season one, they hadn't switched to the mirror universe.
Yeah.
I think that it would have ended at season one. It just been that war between the Klingons and the Federation. People have been like, I'm already bored of this. Let's go. You know.
Well, and again, that's because they didn't do what they built. They built Axanar.
Yeah.
And then gave us the Federation getting their butt kicked and not... And I still don't know what's going on with those Klingons. I mean,
they're definitely prettier with hair.
I just don't know, man. I don't know. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
And that's the other thing that I thought season one just kind of wrapped all that up in a nice little bow and tossed it aside. And season two, you still don't get, I don't know, I just, again, I felt like we needed another couple episodes to tie some of that stuff off for real.
I don't know if, well, I think season two, they did because they knew they were getting a season three. Mm-hmm. They didn't feel that they had to wrap it up in a nice little bow.
Right.
So that's why we get essentially the two-parter with the last episode of season two and what will be the first episode of season three. And you know, they're doing four more Star Trek shorts, so there will be some information that will fill in those gaps in that.
Although I wouldn't count on that.
I know, it may. They did such a good job with the first ones, you know.
You opened up new ideas.
They answered some things and opened new questions up.
Yeah. And.
But to me, that's entertaining.
It is. Because then you spend that. And this is what the genius of that is. What this does is it sets up conversations so that you're talking about that for however long you need to wait.
Yep, exactly. Exactly. Well, it keeps the excitement going. So,
although I will say that AI episode of Short Treks, I was like I had just watched all of season one and I was like, to this day, I'm still like, what is going on?
Well, yeah, because they didn't answer all the questions that episode generated. I mean, the one with Saru, that was foreshadowing.
Right, and honestly, I felt much better about Saru. Was one of those characters I was like...
Yeah, I understood him better after the first... Short trek. You know, the Ensign Tilly was also foreshadowing because they used the short trek to introduce a character that they knew they were going to use in the second season.
Yeah.
And then what I cannot figure out is the Harry Mudd one. Because essentially it's a story that, as of right now, stands on its own.
Which is okay.
Which is totally fine. But
which is why I think it's a... When you say they're going to bring back number one and Spock... I'm okay with that.
Oh, absolutely.
Even knowing that we're not going to see either of those characters...
In season two.
In season three.
Or season three, yeah.
But
I think they're going to use the short tracks as... When you have so many shows, they're going to use them for a couple things. One, it's going to be foreshadowing, depending on who the characters are for the season of the show. I think it's going to be continuity and... potential crossover between shows, since the Georgiou Section 31 show is going to start once season. I guess they're in. Not only are they in production of Picard right now, they're in production of Discovery. Because I read something where there is some overlap. Picard was starting first, but and we just read today that the Empress Georgiou show is going to start. Production as soon as production wraps on season three of Discovery.
Which. Knowing how long it takes to produce these shows, I would think you'd want a little more overlap in production.
Oh, absolutely.
Than that. Which is why I would be like. But I'd be much more encouraged if. 31 started production when Picard wraps.
Yeah. But you also got to remember, too, that we know that the Star Trek Lower Decks is also currently in production. And although that's a different type of production, it's still, you know, Alex Kurtzman is one man, and he's basically running the entire Star Trek empire.
The problem with that show is it's animated, and I think it's actually going to take longer to produce than a live action show.
Oh, absolutely.
So I have to discount
My understanding, though, of Lower Decks is that Lower Decks actually started production first. It's been in production for a while.
Which is my point.
Yeah.
It's going to take it twice as long to produce probably half as much.
But I think there's a reason why you have Discovery's third season and production wrapping, and then they start the Section 31, is because there might be, I don't know the storylines, but there might be some character overlap, you know, depending on if they start the Section 31 show right at the end of Season 2 or not.
Mm-hmm.
And so they need people who are in production for in Discovery who are going to be at least in this first season of Section 31. And then also a lot of the production crew is probably the same.
Well, then there's that.
You know, your editors and your post processors and all that, even your film crew,
camera, yeah, and audio, I would think would be some of the same people. Because that's both good and bad, to be honest.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, you know, and if you really think about it, if they're doing the show that way, meaning they're going to go with the shorter seasons, the 14, 15 seasons, if you run four shows at 15 episodes apiece, you've hit 60 weeks.
Yeah.
You know.
And then some of those will probably run short.
Correct. That's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking they're going to figure out how to run it so that it's 52 weeks. And then probably, I would say probably lower. There might be a little overlap, you know. But I just can't see them doing it. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense for them to do it from a streaming platform perspective.
Although, any time you have an opportunity to put more eyeballs on your streaming service or yeah. your television network
oh,
or
yeah.
whatever, you're going to do. And so the calculation then becomes how much is too much before you oversaturate the market and then do yeah. what we've always done with Star Trek.
Well, the interesting thing is, so they're definitely, from what I've read, there's definitely interest and initial workings of doing a Pike show. Now, that doesn't mean it's going to happen. I would like to see it happen with, you know, Anson Mount and Rebecca Romijn and Ethan Peck. Because I think they were fan favorites in the second season of I mean, I certainly love, of all the captains who isn't Kirk and Archer, I love, well, actually, I like him better than Archer, and that's saying a lot.
Yeah. I've had a real struggle with the captains. Kirk has always been my favorite, but he's also been my first, so I understand.
Yeah.
I mean, I get the favoritism that I have for him. Picard, to me, really wasn't the captain. Riker was.
Yeah.
For many reasons. But Riker was really just another Kirk.
Exactly. Exactly. Did not like Avery Brooks. It would be a whole show. It would take us a couple hours to go through everything I disliked about Avery Brooks being Sisko. And I don't know that it's really Avery Brooks. I think it's how they wrote and created the character Sisko. And now the part that I do think is Avery Brooks' problem is he in some ways he tried to be Hawk.
Well,
as well,
but
as
that's what saved him on that show.
Yeah.
The first, what was it? Two seasons, three seasons.
Mm-hmm.
Before he shaved the hair off his head and got the attitude, I got so sick and tired of the captain being the brooding bore,
yeah,
woe is me BS.
Yep.
This is not the captain of a show. Janeway bugged me for totally different reasons.
I liked Janeway. And I thought the character was played well because... And not only when I say played well, I mean both the writing of the character as well as how she was portrayed by... I want to say Red.
Mulgrew.
Yeah, Kate Mulgrew. Because it was situational. You know, because you see the... what happened in the first episode and how she treated the crew, and it was very professional, I guess is how I say it. There was a professional distance between the captain and the rest of the crew, with the exception of Tuvok, who was her confidant on the ship, who happened to be a Vulcan. So I mean, how you know, how much more intimate can you be, you know, from a friendship perspective? Because they've never wanted to portray any Vulcan but Spock to have that, you know, the deeper. And but you saw her kind of have to change her attitude once they were stranded, you know. And you know, you have to admit that the whole concept of the show was convoluted. I have an alien. I'm chasing the Maquis, who are resistance or terrorists. You know, if we want to, in reality, that's what they were. And another alien being pulls them out of the Alpha Quadrant into the Delta Quadrant, which is so far away that it would, you know, if they'd tried to go on just warp drive alone, it would have taken them hundreds of years. I mean, the premise is convoluted from the start. It's still a good premise. It made an entertaining show.
Agreed.
And, but it was, I thought, if you watch it from beginning to end, it was hard to see it, frankly, when that first aired, because you were only getting an episode a week, and then after 20 episodes or 22 episodes per season, you were waiting 7 or 8 months for it to start over again. And but now that you can go back on Netflix and watch, you know, seasons... two seasons in a day, you know, and then an entire weekend you can watch the whole series. You see how that character grew. It's same thing with, I thought they, Tom Paris, he was my favorite character on Voyager.
Me too.
And what I loved is how, and he kind of was the precursor to Burnham. You know, he essentially got thrown in a Starfleet prison, and she had came and took him out because he knew the Maquis and he knew the you know, the Expanse, and you got to watch the character grow up, you know, and you got to watch what I like too is you got to watch him make mistakes and then see the repercussions of the mistakes and then grow from there again.
Yeah.
But you don't really recognize you. That was more apparent than the watching the growth of Mulgrew's character, you know, Janeway, across the 7 seasons. That was much more subtle. But, I mean, they did it with a lot of the characters. It was really interesting how they did B'Elanna Torres and how they did Harry Kim and even Tuvok. The character who I didn't think grew that much was the same... Well, but Neelix... was our token alien.
Oh, well, I mean, yeah.
He didn't grow any. But the character that Robert Beltran played as Chakotay did not really grow from the beginning of the show to the end of the show.
Well, even the Doctor grew. Yeah. Saying something.
Yeah.
Well, Chakotay kind of... I don't like characters who are tokens.
Yeah.
It's why I don't like Sisko. It was time for a black captain.
He's a token.
I don't like Janeway because it was time for a woman captain. I don't like Chakotay because it was time for a Native American first officer.
Yeah.
I just be who you are and let that shine through your character.
Yeah.
I don't need all that extra.
Well, and you know, and there were quite a few tropes in there too. TNG tropes, you know. You had B'Elanna Torres. We'd already had Worf for 7 seasons as a Klingon, and now she was half Klingon, half human,
which makes her the Spock Of Kronos, which I don't need that either.
And, you know, and Harry Kim got to be a decent character.
But he's really Wesley. Let's
He's a much more likable Wesley.
Right. Because I think they learned that if you're going to have a younger character on there, you need to make him, one, competent, but not overbearing. Right.
Yeah, but, you know, Harry Kim also, was the token Asian.
Mm-hmm.
But because it had already been done, they actually gave him, you know, whereas, as much as I do not like George Takei today, I mean... That's saying a lot because there's several pictures of me with George at various events and stuff, and you know, at one point he knew me by you know, he could recognize me and he knew who I was.
Yeah.
But in reality, in TOS, Sulu really was just a token character.
But so was Uhura.
Yeah.
And so was Spock.
Yeah, and so was Chekhov.
And Chekhov, yeah.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
But that being said, they developed Spock and Chekhov a lot during TOS, you know. Whereas they didn't really develop... I mean, they developed Sulu a little bit. The person who got the worst of it was Nichelle Nichols as Uhura. She truly... It's just like one of the greatest Star Trek movies ever. You know which one I'm talking about?
Yeah. The second or third greatest Star Trek movie of all time.
Yeah. Galaxy Quest. You know, where her job was to repeat the computer.
Yeah, exactly. Hailing frequencies open, Captain.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you know what, though?
I mean, there were some important things that happened with her. The first interracial kiss on TV. They were sure that the censors were going to cut that.
Mm-hmm. But in the fact that she was there and was an important part of what was happening. I mean...
Well, evidently that... You know, she wanted to quit. And Martin Luther King Jr. called her and explained to her, wait a minute, you don't understand... You know, what you're doing is so important.
That she was fourth in command.
Yeah.
Said a lot, too.
Was she fourth or was she fifth?
I've heard it where she's fourth, but honestly, Kirk never said, oh, her, you have the con. It's always Sulu or...
Yeah.
Scotty...
Scotty well, sir, Scotty so. Was third, but that made sense, actually.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I never quite got... I understand why Chekhov wasn't. You know.
I can even see McCoy getting the comment. But, yeah, no, I...
That's almost like when... You know, in TNG, they made the big... That big deal with the episode with Deanna Troi going through command training so that she could...
Take the con.
I think that was probably a nod to.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so too. The whole premise behind what it takes to take the seat.
Yep.
Is not just, you know, as a character, but I think even the actors have to really come to terms with what that means. Some of them do it better than others.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That always brings me to one of the second season episode, or was it, I think, was it second season? It had to be second season, where that spatial anomaly hits the Enterprise. I'm talking of Enterprise, second season of Enterprise. But the spatial anomaly hits the Enterprise, and I think it was Archer pulled T'Pol.
T'Pol,
yeah, out of the way, and it like messed his memory up. It was like a time loop in his memory. So every day when he woke up, they had to explain everything to him again. I mean, it's a trope.
Yeah.
It's kind of like in 50 First Dates with 5 Second Fred or whatever he's called. You know, but. The whole idea was, you know, and time had moved on and he had aged, and you know, and the Enterprise was now Tucker's command.
Yeah.
And all this other stuff. So, you know, it was pretty ingenious. Yeah, it was still during the Zindi War when it happened, so I...
That has to be the second season.
Season, yeah.
I barely remember that one.
It was...
But I gotta tell you, if it was in the middle of the Zindi War, there's very little that I actually remember.
Yeah. I mean, I've gone back and watched all of Enterprise over again. I mean, just like I do TOS occasionally. You know, there won't be anything good in the summer on TV, and when I sit down, I just start watching that again. And so I probably am, well, you know my memory.
Yeah.
Some of it's very vivid to me.
Well, that's like when I finally got my complete set of TNG, I went back and watched them all.
Yeah.
From the beginning. And... there were episodes that I'm sure I saw, but they were so forgettable.
Yeah.
And I'm sure Deep Space Nine is the same, and I know there are episodes of Voyager that I've never seen.
Well, I mean, you know, I'm critical of the whole Dominion War in Deep Space Nine, and part of that is I went back to watch it, because my son's favorite Star Trek is Voyager, and so we watch that all the time. I've watched season 1 through season 7 of that probably in the last 5 years, probably watched that at least 2 or 3 times.
Wow.
And so that's, I'm very familiar with that. That's why I say the show holds up well, because it does. And part of it is I see, when I see younger generations look, you know, like the way we watched TOS,
yeah,
they're watching Voyager. You ask a lot of them, they go, yeah, I love Voyager. Voyager's cool, you know. And then one of my youngest daughter's friends thinks Star Wars is better than Star Trek, which, she's just a poor kid. I must have been dropped on her head too many times, because I can't figure out what's wrong with her.
Just need to ask her if Han shot first, and I'll tell you all you need to know.
Oh, I know. But, you know, it's funny. It's been a few years now. It's been 5 years since last time I was in Great Britain. But over there in 2014, the way you can find TOS on MeTV, they run Next Gen. And, I mean, everybody watches Next Gen over there.
BBC America.
They showed Next Gen.
All the time.
But it's on BBC One, too.
Yeah.
All the time over there.
But that's Patrick Stewart.
Yeah, well, that's largely probably why they do it.
Let's face facts. He's a national treasure.
He's a national treasure. Is that what he said?
Well, that's what I said.
I said that. Is that what you said?
Yeah.
So, well, I think we've probably beat this dog. We could go on for another hour if we wanted to, but I don't think anybody else would want to listen to us. So let's recap on the new stuff coming out. So we know that currently, Star Trek Picard is, which is a new CBS all-access show with Jean-Luc Picard as the main character. And
oh, my goodness.
And he's some, I haven't read, to me, I haven't read a satisfying description of what's going to happen with him. He's some side going to become some kind of ambassador for the United Federation of Planets. But the crew of people who work around him, as opposed to being like AIDS type people, you know, ambassadorial AIDS, sounds like when he was Galen as a being a rogue archaeologist. So, and there has been some talk and a couple things of I've read that you know, that there will be a Starfleet character who's like the, you know, the ambassadorial, but I don't know if that's a recurring character or if it's a permanent main character on the show, because they didn't really give up much.
There was one character who was supposed to be Starfleet intelligence.
Yeah.
And So I don't know what if that means Section 31 or if that legit means Starfleet intelligence, but my problem with the with this is that it's not, this is not Star Trek as we know it.
Correct.
So far. Could it surprise us? It might.
Yep.
Like I said earlier, I'm encouraged that Patrick Stewart is the driving force, and I'm willing to give it a chance because of that. Because I know he's not one that's... One, he didn't want to come back and just do the same thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Which I get.
That's why the show is different.
Exactly. And I'm excited to see it for that very reason. I want to see what would bring Patrick Stewart back as Jean-Luc Picard after this much time and after everything else he's done.
Yeah. And so, I mean, that part's exciting. So, what we know is that the first set of episodes has actually wrapped production. They're now working on the second set, which is all going to be directed by Jonathan Frakes. And then it says late 2019 is the release date on CBS All Access for the show. That could just mean last quarter. So we're talking October 1st, sometime in October, possibly through December. Also, under production is third season of Discovery right now. We do know there's going to be, in the Star Trek shorts, there's going to be a Spock number one episode. Right now, that's all we know from the Star Trek shorts.
Yeah.
And those will start and do the same thing like they did last year. It'll be one a month leading up to the release of Discovery Season 3 sometime, presumably in January. And once production wraps on Season 3 of...
Wow, were those really one a month?
Yeah.
Wow. That's... Wow. That... Wow.
And Season 3 of... once Season 3 wraps, then they're going to start the Section 31 show with Philippa Georgiou. So... And then also under production is Below Decks. The last article I read said that it's going to take them a year to put a season together. But there that includes all of the writing, all the animation, all the VFX, and final edit. So there's no release date for that or the Georgiou show, but it sounds like if they're putting the Section 31 show in production after Season 3 of Discovery, then it's probably got a mid 2020 release date.
So I know you got a thing for her, but to me, waiting that long for a Section 31 show, because this third season of Discovery is gonna take us to the future, and we're gonna be excited about a whole different set of circumstances. To come back to Section 31 after that,
I don't think it will be a disappointment.
I do not. I just think it's going to be disconnected from what we would have needed it to be to carry on some excitement.
Now, I do want to say one thing about Season 3 of Discovery. I think it will be entertaining, but I'm hoping it's not the Jump the Shark episode of Happy Days. You know, we're essentially taking a show that was supposed to take place between Enterprise and TOS, and now we're going to jump them far into the future, presumably farther in the future than Star Trek Picard is, and we're going to have a show there. So, you know, that could be a make it or break it moment.
And
that's why I think they're going to continue with the Section 31 show. Is it's actually the continuation of that time period.
I get that. But is it too long?
And I'm wondering, one of the things I'm wondering, because I read a couple articles about them bringing not just Spock and Number One back, but also Pike. if the first season of the Section 31 show is going to have the Enterprise and the crew of the Enterprise from, you know, Pike's crew as recurring characters, or, you know, maybe they're in one or two episodes like Harry Mudd.
I'd be okay with that just to get us some more Pike.
I know.
Because let's Pike has had Jeffrey Hunter, Bruce Greenwood, and now
Anson Mount.
Anson Mount. Of the three,
Anson Mount is the better.
But he's had more meat to work with.
With, exactly.
Greenwood's Pike was all about let's get to Kirk.
Yeah. It was just a method to get Kirk into Starfleet so that they could start the story in the Star Trek 2009.
Right.
And then in the second one, he was there to build.
And they didn't kill him off right.
I know.
That's the thing that infuriates me. I mean, what you did to Khan was bad enough. What you did to Pike was horrible. Why do we start talking about that again? But Jeffrey Hunter only had the one episode.
Exactly. Well, and that's what I said.
But it was impactful enough that
the character was memorable.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, well, I guess you do have to add the whoever was the actor in the chair with
yeah.
the bleepy song. Bleepy light thing. So I guess there were four guys to play Pike, but the point is, I think we finally got a portrayal that's worthy of the character.
Yeah.
And I think when the problem of Discovery's captain is going to be a continual thing.
Yes.
You know, I mean, it's...
Well, they've gone to the future without a captain because Pike tried to name a captain, and then both Saru and Burnham said, no, let's wait.
Yeah.
But we know that a captain is named because the AI in the short trek talks about the captain told me to stay here.
Yeah. So, who knows? Are they going to find a captain from the Time Bureau in the 31st century? Or
yeah.
Saru going to take the con?
Who knows?
Burnham going to do it?
Yeah.
Who knows? And
maybe,
quite frankly,
maybe they'll just all...
Who cares? I mean, it's captain by committee.
Yeah.
And that's the problem that I've had with this show from the beginning. It's always been captain by committee. You had Georgiou for a half a minute, but that half a minute seemed to drag on for me anyway. I mean, those first two episodes, I wanted to kill myself. But Lorca was a problem. There are many aspects to him that I found appealing and liked, but the longer we stuck on that show, the more infuriating
well,
he
I
was.
Think that was the whole
which
point.
Was the point. And now there is no captain.
Yeah.
And we all want Pike.
Exactly.
And that's the problem of bringing on a character for one season that's not gonna stick around, that's a, you know, what you gonna do?
Yeah, true. Very true. Well, I think we'll wrap it up there. We want to hear from you, our listeners, particularly you, Will Wheaton, if you're listening out there. Send us some feedback to gizmosapiens@gmail.com. That's gizmosapiens@gmail.com. And we'll see you on the digital flip side.
You've been listening to Gizmo Sapiens, a technology and entertainment podcast. You can reach us at our email address at gizmosapiens@gmail.com. That's gizmosapiens@gmail.com. We'd really love to hear from you, and we'll see you next week from the digital flip side.